After graduating from Smith College, Ann Martin became a teacher and then an editor of children's books before becoming a full-time writer. With 176 million copies sold to date, The Babysitter's Club made her a household name. She now resides in the Hudson Valley, and we recently visited her to talk about her career and newest project. In addition to The Babysitter's Club, Anne has written the acclaimed novel In Letters, P.S. Longer Letter Later, and Snail Mail No More with author Paula Danziger. She's written several series, several novels set in the 1960s, including Belle Teal and A Corner of the Universe. Her novel A Dog's Life, the autobiography of a stray, is one of my favorites. Her new book is Better to Wish, book number one in the Family Tree series. Anne Martin, I want to thank you so much for opening up your home to us. What a delight.
Thank you. My pleasure.
When you have a new series like this, does it excite you that, okay, you've decided this will be a four-book series, so you then know what you're going to do for a little while?
Yes, exactly. I work well with deadlines, and there are always lots of deadlines with a series. Yeah, and it's nice to know what I'm going to be doing for a while. I'm usually working on other projects at the same time as I'm working on the series, but there is a certain amount of security with writing a series.
And other projects, you mean other books, standalone books?
Yes.
What do those give you that a series doesn't, and what does a series give you that those don't?
The standalone novels are fun to work on because it's usually a new cast of characters every time. I like creating characters, writing about new settings. On the other hand, writing a series, if you're very attached to the characters, you don't have to say goodbye to them at the end of each book, not until the end. And it's nice to have that comfort and familiarity. I think that's why we enjoy reading series, too. There's a certain similarity between writing series and reading series.
The new one, which I mentioned, is Family Tree. This is book one, and four generations, four girls, one family. This is Better to Wish. What is the challenge in the first book of a series to set it up?
The challenge in the first book of any series actually is creating the characters. That I don't feel that when I write a series that the characters are fully developed by the end of the first book necessarily, although Better to Wish is a little bit different because at the end of the first book, the main character is going to fade from the picture just a little bit. She'll be present in the next three, but the second book is going to be her daughter's book. But in general, working on a series, I don't feel that things are, well, actually, let me rephrase that. There's room to expand and explore characters and settings in the next books.
What brought you to 1930?
My editor had suggested a four-book intergenerational family story to me, the first book being told by a young girl, the second book to be told by her daughter, the third book her granddaughter, and the fourth book her great-granddaughter, and I wanted to be able to wind up the series in the present, so it seemed natural that the first book would be set mostly in the 1930s. There's a little bit in the 20s, and it goes into the 40s, but in order for the book to span nearly 100 years, the first book sort of had to be set in the 30s, which was interesting for me because I've never written a book set outside of my own time period. So I had to do a little bit of, well, actually quite a bit of research to write what felt to me very much like a historical novel.
And is there a feeling that children who will be reading this may be reading about this period for the first time? So obviously there is a sense of wanting to get that right.
Yes, absolutely. It certainly could be the first time that a child is reading about the 1930s, and I wanted it to be right, but I also wanted it to feel familiar enough so that Abby's story would be a story that they could relate to.
And that's what's wonderful about childhood, is that kids are kids, whether they're in the 1930s or 2013.
Yes, exactly. And although some of the things that Abby faces in this book are not things specifically that kids today would face, the Great Depression, although perhaps things aren't quite so different now than they were then, but certain historical things certainly are different. On the other hand, they're really are a lot of themes that are timeless: family, friendship, fitting in, loss. So those, I think, are certainly things that kids could relate to today.
That whole notion of what sort of life will fit you best, right?
Yes.
Which is timeless.
Right, exactly. And finding your way through that life with support and also without support and becoming independent.
And what kind of seeds do you plant in the first book that you're ready to see grow in book two and book three and book four?
By the end of the first book, Abby is in her early 20s. That was one thing that was unusual about the books in this series. Each book spans not just a few years, but each girl's entire childhood, really, starting from when she's 6, 7, 8 years old and ending when she's a young adult and fairly independent. There are certain characters who are present in the first book that will be present, some more importantly and some less importantly, in the second book and in the third and fourth books, too. We're setting the stage for Abby's life as an adult, especially for the life of her daughter, but her daughter hasn't been born by the end of book one.
When you set out on a project like this, how quickly, once you have that idea, once the research is done, how quickly does it come then?
That really depends on the book. This book needed a lot more research, actually, than any book I've ever written, and so obviously more than the other three books in the series. Before I even started doing the research, though, I had a general idea of where I wanted the book to go and how I wanted Abby's life to unfold, and then it was a matter of creating the backdrop against which her life would unfold. I'm a huge outliner. I outline in stages. There are at least three stages for every outline for each book. So by the time I start writing, I know generally where it's going. But in the case of this first book, the research went hand in hand with the outline, but I already knew where I wanted the story to go.
And that's not just for this book, that's for book 2, 3, and 4 as well, I would assume.
Yes, absolutely, except that I simply didn't need to do quite as much research for the last three books. When my editor first came to me with this idea, I said to him something about not having written historical fiction before, and he very kindly pointed out that, I'd written four books that were set in the 50s and 60s, which was my childhood, and that most people, kids today, would in fact consider that historical fiction. But because it was my own childhood and later my adulthood, I didn't really need to do as much research for the last three books.
Then you fired your editor. Yeah. Let us talk a little bit about your success as far as I read a little bit in the introduction about your story, but the idea of the Babysitter's Club came how, in the sense of you always expected it to be a series of some nature, right?
Initially, it was going to be a four-book series, just like Family Tree. And again, it was an idea that was suggested to me by my editor, a different editor from Family Tree. She had the title for the series, The Babysitter's Club, and she was looking for a series of stories about girls, friendships, babysitting, but it was up to me to figure out what a babysitter's club was and to develop the characters. There were four main characters that I created, and each character was going to have her own story, and that was going to be it, those four books. So we knew it was going to be a series, but we didn't think that it was going to go beyond four books.
When did you know you had something?
I would say we knew we had something after book six. After the first four books came out and did very nicely, Scholastic very cautiously signed up two more books. And I think it was the sixth book that appeared on something that doesn't exist anymore, the B. Dalton bestseller list. And I think we cautiously signed up two more books after that. And all of a sudden, it exploded. But I think it was when book six appeared on that list that we knew we had something.
Do you have any idea what it was that clicked with readers? I mean, part of this is the great story, but part of it also is getting it out there and getting it into the hands of the kids. And the fact that it just, before the internet, before texting, before any technology would allow that, it just went like a brush fire.
I honestly think in the beginning it was word of mouth because my editors and I certainly didn't expect it to explode. So Scholastic was behind it. They were supporting the series. The first book came out in 1986. And as you were saying, yeah, there was no internet. Kids weren't tweeting and anything like that. I think it was word of mouth and Scholastic's support. But after the series exploded, then there was a huge amount of support from the bookstores. I remember sign-up sheets would be sent to the bookstores so that when each new book hit the stores, which was once a month for most of the series, kids on the sign-up sheet would be called at home to say that the book was in the stores. So there was already a great amount of interest. But I really think that what kids were responding to was, again, sort of timeless stories, family, friendships, becoming independent, babysitting, a group of girls who were very appealing, who were very different from one another, but who all got along together. And I think that readers were able to find themselves in all of the characters. They could relate to them individually and as a group.
During that time, I was working in an independent bookstore while I was going to college, and one of my jobs was to call up those kids and tell them that the new book had arrived. And it was, you know, every month there was a Christmas that your book had arrived in the stores. And I remember us saying that if it wasn't for you, that the place would have gone out of business a long time ago, and the check wouldn't have cleared, because it just brought so many people into the store in such an excitement. What was it like on your end of trying to keep up with that when they suddenly say to you, okay, we need a book a month, and you become not only just an author and a name, but a brand and a franchise?
It was exciting, and as you can imagine, it was also overwhelming. It was fun to be involved in all sorts of things that I had never expected to become involved in, all sorts of aspects of something like that. It was a brand in addition to being a series. There were board games, jewelry, clothing, and I got to have a part in that, to have a say in things. And it was really interesting and something I had never, ever expected to do. But for me, the writing and the books was always the most important thing. And the demands were huge, but I managed to keep up with them. And when the series finally ended 14 years later, I said I would never, ever write a series again. And I've written two since then, so that didn't mean anything.
It didn't last long. But again, it goes back to what we were saying before of what is good about a series and what, because it does allow you some freedom to create this world and these characters. When it comes to the impact that the Babysitter's Club has had, and since it's been 14 years since a new one came out, is it still shocking to you of the longevity?
Yes, absolutely. And what was interesting to me and unexpected was that after the series had ended, maybe 4 or 5 years later, I started receiving more and more letters from readers who were adults who had read the books when they were growing up, instead of getting letters from kids. And that probably happens more now, even now, than it did, although kids are rediscovering the books, which is great. I mean, not rediscovering the books. Kids are discovering the books for the first time. But it was surprising to me to find out how strongly young girls had felt about the books, so strongly that when they were adults, they were still reading the books, talking about the books, writing me about the books, hoping to introduce their students or children to the books when they were old enough. And that was gratifying and unexpected.
And there's this whole body of work, and some of those are in print, some of them are not, right?
Many of the books are not in print right now. The first 8 books were reissued within the last couple of years with new covers, but they're basically the same stories. And the first few books, I don't know how many exactly, are being published now in ebook format.
And because they really are timeless, they can be introduced to a new generation. There's this incredible body of work. I remember talking to Fred Rogers about this, of saying, you know, he did Mr. Rogers shows in the 1970s that could still be broadcast, and he felt that there was that legacy that could go on, and they could release them when he wanted to and go back to that material because it was solid and it was good.
Thank you. I mean, for comparing me to Mr. Rogers. no, I think it's absolutely true. The books are, they are solid, and there are the timeless themes that I've mentioned. And because the books were originally written in the 80s and 90s, before kids had cell phones, before everyone carried cell phones, when we reissued the new books, we didn't include that. We updated anything that was completely obsolete, such as VCRs, and changed VCRs to things that would be timeless. I wanted to change VCRs to DVD players, and my editor said, no, that's going to be obsolete too. So we tried to make the books then timeless, I mean, to keep them timeless. And I think that will help them hold up in the future, as silly as it seems, when you add that to the themes of friendship and family and independence and all that sort of thing, that I think the books will hold up for a long time.
Was there, because it became so huge, were there other people helping you in the writing of it, or was it just you?
No, there were other people helping me. After the first four or six books came out over the course of about a year and a half, but by the time the series really had exploded and Scholastic realized that there was something big going on, we decided to publish one book a month for the Babysitter's Club. And not long after that, the Little Sister series spun off, and the Little Sister books were also coming out at the rate of one a month. So clearly I wasn't going to be able to write 24 books a year. So my editors helped find a very small group of other writers for both series. We kept the group small purposely so that we could maintain a consistent writing style, so that the books wouldn't sound as if they had been written by other people. And I outlined all of the books, even the ones I wasn't writing, and had a chance to edit them too. So I felt I had a hand in each book, but as time went on, more and more of them were written by other writers who were writing from my outlines.
In 2000, when you decided to end it, and was that a difficult decision?
It was hard to say goodbye to the series, but we all felt that it was time to. It was becoming more difficult to come up with new ideas for the stories, and nobody wanted it to get stale. And I wanted to have time to work on other projects, or more time to work on other projects. So it was hard to say goodbye to the characters, but we absolutely felt that it was the right thing to do.
So when you get rid of all that, and then it's back to just being you and writing the books, is there tremendous freedom in that?
Absolutely. I felt like I had a huge luxury in the amount of time that I had to write each book. If I had a year or 2 years to spend on a book, it was like a dream, having written all of these books in a month each. And I was able to spread my wings and think about writing books that were set in other time periods and create new characters and experiment with fantasy and other genres. So it was wonderful. Yeah.
What do you make of the scene of young adult and children's literature now, still very much influenced by series, and still quite vibrant, still a large part of the bookstore?
I think it's wonderful. First of all, anything that gets kid reading is fabulous. And that's one that I had liked when I was working on the Babysitter's Club. I was always hoping that kids would get hooked on the series and then would discover other books as well. And I think that's what's happening today with the series that are being published. They may be very different from the Babysitter's Club, but they hook kids, they get them reading. And I think that's great. And plus, there's nothing like getting hooked on series. I get hooked on adult series of books all the time. And I read standalone novels too. But I think series writing is great, especially if it encourages kids to become eventually more eclectic readers.
Did you ever think to yourself, even recently, of saying, "Wow, you know, if the Babysitter's Club could have like had a club where they all go out and, you know, one of them will have to die and the other one will have to stay alive." And there'll be this game, you know, and that becomes a popular series. You think, wow, is that even an option?
Certainly not with Christy, Claudia, Stacy, and Marianne, that's right. For sure. No, it wouldn't have been an option in the world that I had created, but because you have to set it up that way from the beginning. But to work on something like that now with different characters, it would be great fun.
I guess it's interesting to me of the audience now reacting to that as opposed to a more, obviously, these, you know, the stories of family and friendship that are so important, but yet we also go in this completely other fantasy world.
Right. Well, I think in some ways Harry Potter upped the ante in a fabulous way, because I think the books are brilliant. And I think they just took kids in a different direction in terms of their reading. The books are completely different from, not from everything that was being published in the 80s and 90s, but from a lot. And I think everything goes in waves. And I read a lot of fantasy when I was growing up. I loved Tolkien. When I was younger, a lot of the books that I read were fantasy, not like the kind of fantasy kids are reading today. But when I think about it, The Wizard of Oz, even the Paddington Bear books, they're all fantasy. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just a different kind of fantasy today. And I think it's all fabulous. I think there's room for everything.
Because you think of Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe and Madeline Engel and Wrinkle in Time, fantastical places and different than anything else that was out there, but still about family and right. those core issues.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when you look down the road, this obviously is four books, and then you're always working on something.
I'm always working on something. Laura Godwin, who is my co-author on the Doll People books, and I have just finished the fourth Doll People book, which will be out next year. And I'm very excited about the new standalone novel that I'm working on right now, which doesn't have a title, but which is about a young girl with Asperger's syndrome. So, yes, always working on something.
The newest is Better to Wish. It is in the Family Tree series, book one, published by Scholastic. Ann Martin, a delight. Thank you so much for spending time with us.
Thank you very much.
Again, the title of the book is Better to Wish in the Family Tree series, book one, published by Scholastic. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. You can always come.